Do you solemnly swear that you will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that you will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that you would take this obligation freely, without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that you will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which you are about to enter, so help you God. Congratulations, you're now members of the 114th Congress.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to AJC Radio, where we bring the message of justice around the world. I'm Cliff Stewart. Joining me tonight is Lamont Banks, Sam Thurman, and the wonderful Lisa Stewart. We're all in the studio together here tonight for our first kickoff of the Spotlight on Capitol Hill, where we will be spotlighting and highlighting a Capitol Hill member of Congress and their initiatives in the justice system. Tonight we will be dealing with Congressman Cedric Richmond. He is the congressman from Louisiana in District 2, and we're going to be spotlighting some of the initiatives that he has on the table that will bring, not only good things to his constituents, but also to the nation as a whole. So we look very forward to that tonight. We're excited about kicking that off. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing pretty good.
Doing good.
All right. Well, we're happy to all be here. We want to let you know that if you, as our listeners out there, if you want to call in and participate in what's going on tonight, you can feel free to dial us up at 347-838-8976. Again, that is 347-838-8976. And we'd be happy to take your comment or any question that you might have for us or any other guests. And in the chat room, you guys get out there. You've been doing a great bang-up job on keeping the conversation going, and we appreciate it. Last time we were on the air, we saw some very provocative statements and information in the chat room. So we know that what we're saying to you has really got you thinking, and we appreciate that. Right now, we want to have Lisa go into our disclaimer, let everybody know who we are and who we are not.
Thanks, Cliff. We want to just remind everyone that we are not attorneys, and A Just Cause Coast to Coast does not provide any legal advice. You want to contact your personal legal advisor for your legal needs. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests do not necessarily reflect that of A Just Cause. And as always, thanks for tuning in and choosing to spend just a little of your evening with us.
All right. That's great. So if you call in, you got a question about some legal matters, realize we are not going to give you any answers that you can take to anybody that holds us accountable. But we will tell you the truth about what we see going on in the justice system. We will not hold our tongue or hold our peace when it comes to injustice. That's what we're here for, to bring that information to you. Sam, I know that there are some things that are out there that we want to deal with as far as, the GoFundMe, as far as the IRP6 family. If you can just run through that for us real quick.
I sure can. The IRP6, and we're talking about David Banks, Dave Zappolo, Kendrick Barnes, Clinton Stewart, Demetrius Harper, and Gary Walker. These are gentlemen that we focus on several times during the broadcast with regard to being wrongfully convicted. And if you'd like more information about the IRP6, we ask that you go out to freetheirp6.org and you can get the complete story. And we will refer to them from time to time. Here's the situation is that these men were the breadwinners in their families. And when they were wrongfully convicted and have now been incarcerated for over 3 years, it dramatically impacted their families. And so each week we encourage our listeners to go out to GoFundMe. That's www.gofundme.com. And do a search on IRP6. and you can make contributions directly to the families of the IRP6. And again, you know, these gentlemen were the primary breadwinners. And when someone is wrongfully incarcerated, whether it's, you know, man, woman, it doesn't matter. It impacts more than just that person who is incarcerated. So go out to GoFundMe, do a search on IRP6, and we'll appreciate any contribution that you can make.
All right. Yeah. And we also want you to go out there and follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook. You know, help us to get the word out there about justice and the way it should be done. Some of the statements that you've heard about the U.S. justice system, we try our best to dispel the wrong ones and bring light to those that are good. So if you go out there, follow us, you'll see some, you know, some very informative statements coming out, some very informative tweets during the day. And you also get updates on our Facebook page about, you know, each show that comes out on Tuesday and Thursday night here on AJC Radio. You can also go to AJCRadio.com where you can get those that station information and information about the other stations that we're on as well. So feel free to go out there, follow us, and, you know, help us to spread the word.
And, folks, ladies and gentlemen, it's a good idea tonight, as Cliff, you know, alluded to, that this is Spotlight on Capitol Hill. This is the reason that you folks actually go to the polls on a cold November day and make your voice heard to our elected officials. And as Cliff alluded to, Congressman Cedric Richmond doing some great things in Washington, really trying to make an impact. And we got quite a bit of information to share about him. We're honored to recognize him tonight. I had an opportunity to talk to his staff today. The congressman was actually scheduled to be on this program tonight and ran into some travel issues, sent his sincere apologies to us, says he definitely wants to come back, and he will be tuning in to this program later in the weekend as we at AJC Radio shine the light on our elected officials and focus on what they are doing. And I think it's going to be very informative, Cliff, to the American people out there. They need to know what's going on behind closed doors on Capitol Hill.
Absolutely, and that's what we want to make sure, is that they have that what's going on Capitol Hill is being exposed to the audience that listens to us. Because so many times we hear from people, you know, they might ask us for advice. They might say, well, how do you do this? How do you do that? We tell them you have to be informed about what is going on, not only, you know, on a national level, but at your local level. You got to go to the polls. You have to understand what's going on in the legislature in your local area. I mean, if you don't go out and you don't vote, you don't speak your voice, then you really can't take your right to complain. If you don't vote, then don't complain. That's always been my mantra. If you do vote and the person that you voted in office is not doing what you feel they should, then by all means, you have the right to speak up, make your voice heard, and vote them out. Vote somebody in who's really going to get something done. And that's what our spotlight is about, to let you know that these elected officials, this is what is very dear to their heart, the things that they want to, you know, basically expose out there to the public and let you know what they're doing for the American people on a whole.
Absolutely. And I guess we're going to go to some current news now. And Sam...
Yeah, Lamont, you know, in the news, and I think, you know, we were talking earlier about picking something that's currently in the news that is relative to Capitol Hill. And, you know, when we talk about the crisis with ISIS and the terror that's gripping the United States right now, the House Committee on Homeland Security yesterday, they held a hearing on, and they called it the Terrorism Gone Viral. They focused on the situation that had happened in Garland, Texas, where there was the shooting that had happened. But what came out of that was the FBI. They reported on the fact that there is a growing concern with encrypted communication and private messaging that's being used by members of ISIS. Now, why is that a problem? Because of the fact that they cannot track what these folks are saying. They reported that there is an estimated 40,000 tweets per week get that, 40,000 tweets per week in support of ISIS. And then when they do the number crunching, they also say that there are hundreds of thousands, internationally, there are hundreds of thousands and possibly even millions of people throughout the world who are creating social media accounts and ingesting social media in support of ISIS. Now, if that doesn't make you concerned, Lisa and Lamont and Cliff, you've been living under a rock.
Absolutely. That's ridiculous.
Well, go ahead, Cliff.
No, I was just going to say that that makes you concerned on several different levels, because you think about who's out there on Twitter more than everybody else. More than the business people, you have our young people that are out there. You know, you got teenagers. You have those who are susceptible to, you know, just having someone give them an idea, and then they run with it without doing their research, without really thinking it out. And so if you got ISIS recruiting people across social media, that is a level of danger that, I mean, the federal government has got to do something to really rein this in. I mean, yeah, you don't want to go around and tell everybody, hey, we're taking control of your Twitter account, but we got to come to some type of conclusion about what we're going to do about it.
Yeah, well, and you're in a position, as you know, young people, Cliff, as you just said, and Sam and Lisa, they're influential anyway.
Right. Absolutely.
I believe when people are disillusioned with the system of America right now, where people are not trusting the federal government, they're not trusting law enforcement agencies, you know what? They tend to go to the bad versus the good.
Right.
And America's got to be held accountable for that. There's a part America plays in what they have failed to do. When you got people getting killed in the streets by police officers, you got judges, corrupt judges, sending family members to prison.
Yep.
You got the largest population of incarceration in the world. There's nothing that you send, as far as a message that you send to these young people, other than that we have a very broken system that needs to be revamped, that needs to be reborn.
And you know what, Lamont? Are we not, or do we not position ourselves as the most sophisticated nation in the world when it comes to technology?
Sure.
Why can't they track, you know, what these people are doing? There's a serious systemic breakdown. And, you know, a few years ago, there's a guy by the name of Jack Israel, and he was the chief technology officer, I believe, for the FBI. And he did an interview in fiercegovernment.com, and he talked about the failures of the Sentinel Project. He talked about the failures of the virtual case file. These are systems that were supposed to be put in place for these types of situations.
Sure.
Mr. Israel broke it down as to why these things fail. Now, 10 years later, you got situations where ISIS is going crazy, and we don't know what to do. And they're saying they got encrypted communication. We don't know how to track them.
And when you go back to what Jack Israel said, then you look at the 10th anniversary of the 9/11 Commission report. I mean, it came out last year and said that America is no safer than it was on 9/11. Nothing has changed. There's no better process in place. We still have the same exact issue. And that is where the problem lies. It's like, why won't these agencies, these federal law enforcement agencies, FBI, CIA, NSA, DHS, they need to come together and say, we need to consolidate our efforts against terrorism. We need to obviously share the information that we have about what's going on so that we can put forth some type of defense against what's coming against our nation and the entire world.
Absolutely.
All righty. We are going to go to a break really quick, and when we come back, we're going to delve into a little bit more about what we call justice. So stay there. Don't go anywhere. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. This is AJC Radio, where we bring the message of justice around the world.
Do you have a big brother? Well, I have a big brother, and I'm pretty sure that you and I experience some of the same things with a big brother. Big brothers will always be big brothers, right? I'm sure you'll agree. Well, my brother gets up in the morning. He takes a shower, heads to work, And at some point during the day, he's going to exercise and get that workout, as we all do. And, of course, depending on what's going on, he's going to sit down for two or three meals during the course of his day. And also, depending on what else is going on, he'll probably get caught up on current events and maybe take a few moments to turn a page in a book. How about your big brother? Some of the same stuff, right? Oh, did I mention that my big brother does all of that stuff? But he actually has to have permission a lot of times before he can do it. You see, my big brother was wrongfully convicted of a crime that he did not commit. That's right. That may sound shocking, huh? He's in prison. Wrongful convictions impact families in ways you cannot begin to imagine. But I've decided that I'm going to do something about it. And I extend an invitation to you to come on board and join me in this fight. You see, I'm helping to be a voice for my big brother and others who have been wrongfully convicted. We'd like you to take a few moments today and call a Just Cause, where we fight for justice. You can call us toll free at 1-855-529-4252. That's 1-855-529-4252. Join with us as we fight for justice and for all big brothers across the land.
Hi, I'm an actor, and that qualifies me to talk to you about social issues. And even though my opinion is controversial, I believe that racism is wrong. Now today, what I would like you to do is take a look at your skin color and hug somebody that has a different color skin. We can stop racism together, one hug at a time. Definitely ask permission before you hug somebody. Thank you.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Cliff Stewart, and this is AJC Radio, where we bring the message of justice around the world. We're back on the air with you tonight, talking about all the things that we know that are broken in the judicial system, and we also, you know, we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater unless that baby has passed away. We want to put him in the grave and give him a tombstone. Some parts of the justice system are what we have. That's what we have to do with it. We have to say, hey, it needs to be revamped. It needs to be redone. It needs to be taken out and thrown away. But for the good parts, those very few, we will highlight those to you as well. Right now on the phone, we do have a caller that wants to make a comment about broken justice. We have Lawrence from Baltimore. Lawrence, you're live. Go ahead.
Well, thank you very much. Before I make this comment, I would like very much to say that you gentlemen are doing a very good job. And I for one, I really appreciate it. I had to say that and get it out of the way. But when it comes to the broken justice system, like I was speaking about earlier, but you got to bear with me because I have a disability that makes me shake. So when I shake, it's difficult for me to talk. So sometimes it makes it difficult for my words to be clearly understood. So you have to kind of be able to... Okay. Well, my point is, I just think that when it comes to the judicial system, it's much more to it than that, because you have a lot of people. So the young people aren't really necessarily in tune with all the hierarchy. they're not necessarily in tune with that. All they see is the people that's disappointing them. And that's what, this is where their frustration is coming from. Their frustration, and so frustration is rampant. It's so great. It's so much that their cup runs over, and it makes it bad for everybody. So at this point, and so now we need to try to figure out a way that we can have leadership that is leading us in the right direction instead of leading us in a direction that's going to benefit them. That's the most important thing. See, because then that way, like I said, for instance, I'm going to give you an example real quick because I know I don't have that much time. I'm going to give you an example. Okay, when the situation arose in Baltimore, right? And the mayor, instead of Freddie Gray, and the mayor didn't say anything that would alleviate the frustration of the public, of society, and the mayor didn't say anything for a minute. However, a week or so, maybe 2 weeks later, Marilyn Mosby did, even if it wasn't much. It was something. She addressed it. This is exactly what the mayor should have done in order to keep peace. It should have been a plan in place for crisis. It wasn't. And these are the type of things that frustrates people. These are when you you take a chance on putting people in an office or elders to do things for you, and then when it's time for them to do them, they do them incorrect, and they do them over and over incorrectly. I mean, it brings about frustration, anger, emotion. Yeah,
it brings about dissension in the entire community. And thank you very much for your comment, Lawrence. But what you say is absolutely right. I mean, if you have the elected official and they're not doing what you as a community feel like they need to be doing, then you as a community need to step up, get out there, vote to ensure that your elected officials are doing what you would have them to do. That is the message that we try to get across here on AJC Radio, that you have to take a part, the community has to take a part in what's going on in their judicial system. Because, you know, in America, it's supposed to be a system that's for the people, by the people, and all of this. But if the people aren't doing their part, then what exactly do you want? And that is why, you know, we say that, you know, on these Thursday nights, we're going to let a member of Congress come on and say, this is what I'm doing for the people. And then the people have to realize that they have to do their part. That's what we're all here for. That is what makes the system, as broken as it is, that's the only way that we can get any type of positive action out of the justice system, is we all have to do our part. And without that, the system breaks down even more. We all know it's broken, but what are we going to do to fix it?
Well, I can tell you right now that Congressman Cedric Richmond is doing something in Washington, D.C. And as it being a spotlight on Capitol Hill, we're talking about some things that are taking place about Congressman with Congressman Richmond. And Cliff, if I can, I'm going to read a little bit of biography on the congressman. He's done pretty well. Congressman Cedric Richmond represents Louisiana's 2nd Congressional District in the United States House of Representatives. Currently serves on the House Committee on Homeland Security and House Committee on the Judiciary. Outside of the committee service, he's an active member of the Congressional Black Caucus and the New Democratic Coalition. As a member of the Committee on Homeland Security, Mr. Richmond works to ensure New Orleans and surrounding communities are adequately prepared for any emergency through oversight of the Federal Emergency Management Association, better known as FEMA. He also works to ensure the security of the nation's critical infrastructure, borders, and ports. Also, as a congressman, being a member of the Committee on the Judiciary, as you know, is the second oldest standing committee in Congress. Congressman Richmond works with committee members to exercise oversight, responsibility for the U.S. Departments of Justice and Homeland Security. The congressman is involved with some things that impact this nation. And to the congressman out there, we definitely salute what you're doing out there. We believe in what you're doing. And Cliff and Sam and Lisa, these are the type of people who are doing things for those states that they represent that makes a difference.
Absolutely.
And Lamont, it not only makes a difference for his state, but it makes a difference for the whole country.
Yes.
I mean, looking at his legislations, these are not things that are just going to affect his personal constituents. These are going to affect all of us as a nation as a whole are going to be affected by these changes.
Absolutely. And you know what? This is what that's about, Cliff. I mean, like you said, you know, you got the gentleman. He's saying, man, we got a problem. The system is broken. We need Congress people like Congressman Richmond who are getting down in the trenches and knowing what needs to be done in their districts and make things happen. You got a lot of people to get elected, and they simply
right.
go to their offices, and what do?
Yeah, they sit there. They might take on an issue that affects their constituents, their districts, just in their immediate area. But when you really look at what Congressman Richmond is doing, I mean, you look at the reforms that he's going to have. He has a reform for the stance on criminal justice. This is not only something that is very dear to New Orleans, but the state of Louisiana as a whole, but also the entire nation. Then he has a bill to end the school to prison pipeline. This is not just a Louisiana issue. This is an issue that across the board, this needs to be addressed in everyone's district, from California to New York. This needs to be handled. And then the Solitary Confinement Study and Reform Act, he's on that as well. These are issues that not only say that I understand what my constituents need, but I understand as well what the nation needs on a whole to reform these systems so that we as an entire society can say that our judicial system is better in at least these areas that he's dealing with.
Well, and Sammy, as you know, he actually has the in those positions mm-hmm. on those committees, the judiciary, again, as we just
right.
said, the second oldest committee on judiciary
right.
on issues. I know from what we talking to his staff today, there are some current things that he's doing, Cliff, that is really leaning on current criminal justice reform. We did get an opportunity to pull a clip of an interview where he's talking about the race relations
right.
that's majorly wrong in this country right now. We
yes.
have a huge distrust and a disconnect and a divide when you're dealing with racial issues in this country. We're going to get ready to play the clip right now.
8 years ago, we established the Council on Black Men and Boys in Louisiana to do just this. It's a systematic problem, and if you look at the fact that 42% of all African-American kids go to schools that are underperforming, you look at all of the socioeconomic factors, I think it's a lot harder. Now, I will say that I'm very happy that the president has come out to say, and specifically say, black-on-black crime, urban youth violence, and all of those things, because I think we have to be very specific in defining the problem before you can ever start to fix it.
Wow. I mean, that's a cliff.
Yeah, that yeah. statement right there, as simple as it is, but it speaks volumes. You have to be very specific in what the problem is before you can solve it. Because you hear a lot of people, a lot of so-called, civil rights leader, a lot of so-called, whoever, that they come out and they say all these things. But you have to get to the root that this is the particular specific problem that we need to deal with. I mean, there's an overall tone of racism in America, and nobody can deny that. But we can't just say we need to deal with racism in America. How do we get down at a granular level and say, for the state of Colorado, this is what we see. Then for the largest city in Colorado, well, in Denver, this is what we see. And then we bring it all the way home and say, you know what, in Colorado Springs, this is what the race relations are. This is how we need to attack that problem. That is how you get down to the very specifics of what the issue is, yeah, so that you can deal with them. You can't just say there's a racial problem in America, because, sure, absolutely, that's like saying there is a global warming issue. What do we do to address it?
Well, Lisa, I think we were talking earlier about Congressman Richmond's stance on, I think you said, school-to-prison pipeline. Did you want to share that with the listeners tonight?
Yes, because one of his legislations that he's pushing right now is the bill to end the school-to-prison pipeline. And those of you, I've done a little research on it. Those of you who aren't sure of what the school-to-prison pipeline is, let me just inform you a little bit. The school-to-prison pipeline is an epidemic that's plaguing schools across the nation. And I'm reading an article here for you. It says, far too often, students are suspended, expelled, or even arrested for minor offenses that leave visits to the principal's office a thing of the past. So statistics reflect that these policies disproportionately target students of color and those with a history of abuse, neglect, poverty, or learning disabilities. Students who are forced out of school for disruptive behavior are usually sent back to their origin of their angst and unhappiness, their home environments, or their neighborhoods, which are filled with negative influence. Those who are forced out for similar offenses become hardened, confused, embittered. Those who are unnecessarily forced out of school become stigmatized and fall behind in their studies. And many eventually decide to drop out of school altogether, and many others commit crimes in their community. Now, they don't have, they're saying they can't pinpoint an exact reason for the school-to-prison pipeline. Many attribute it to the zero-tolerance policing that took form after the 1999 Columbine school massacre. Others blame educators, accusing them of pushing out students who score lower on standardized tests in order to improve the school's overall test scores.
Wow.
You're pushing these kids into prison because you want to improve the test scores so that you look better as an instructor, as a teacher?
Sure.
Yeah, that's absolutely disgusting. And when you look at Congressman Richmond, his stance on the bill to end the school-to-prison pipeline, Congressman Richmond introduced this legislation in an effort to curb the trend of youth incarceration due to schools' over-reliance on law enforcement to address misbehavior in the classroom, which has been referred to as the school-to-prison pipeline. So basically, just to piggyback off what Lisa just read, the whole trend of this, using law enforcement in the schools, it is such an overreach on what should happen. I mean, when we were all coming up, you get in trouble in school, you go to the principal's office. The principal deals with you. If he can't, he calls your parent. Now, instead, as soon as something happens, they call the cops. And we have had others on the show that have laid out the schools in communities of color where this school-to-prison pipeline has basically been utilized, that they call the police on schools on the students that they feel like, well, these students are too disruptive, we can't handle them. But you're talking about all the way down to third and fourth grade. And one of the things that Congressman Richmond that he states is that juveniles that have been incarcerated are much more likely to become criminals later in life, and much less likely to achieve economic success. That is one of the statistics that he lays out, and that is very sad, because I think about how I was brought up and where I come from. And when you look at this and you say, okay, just because you were incarcerated as a juvenile, this is something that is supposed to fall off your record, that is supposed to, you're supposed to get a new chance, a new lease on life once you become an adult. This statistic is showing that these juveniles are more likely to become criminals and less likely to achieve economic success. It's a sad situation.
Well, Cliff, this is about America, okay? We keep talking about America. We keep talking about the principles in which we were brought up on. We heard the other night on the program, a young lady gets 3 years in prison for throwing cran apples at a school teacher, whoever this is what Congressman Richmond, there's a vision he has to see here, that this is the school in the school to prison pipeline. Number one goes to the other stance that he's taken right now, criminal justice reforms, which is massive growth in the federal prison population. And that's what he's talking about. It says
right.
he had experienced that we have experienced. This is from his office. Congressman Richmond feels that we have experienced massive growth in state and federal prison population. It's no longer worth the cost. State incarceration levels are also out of control. The Congressman states we need action now, not only to address the collateral consequences, but overall the drivers of our mass incarceration. Lisa, goes right back to what you said.
Yes.
Out of school, straight to prison.
Yeah.
This is a beginning of an end, and the Congressman, we salute him tonight, because he is fighting for what we know to be the problem.
And another thing that he's doing, Lamont, he said he's trying to help ensure a strong, coordinated effort to give schools the tools they need to be schools instead of pipelines to prison. He's introduced the Student Disciplinary Fairness Act 2013, which is going to make a dramatic change in all these children being sent to prison when they should be getting an education and being disciplined in a normal way as opposed to being sent to prison.
And you know, Lisa, I'm looking at an infographic here that talks about the school-to-prison pipeline, and it shows the contrast, the cost versus the benefit of after-school programs versus the school-to-prison pipeline. And so, you know, if you look at the benefit of an after-school program, now, and that's one of the things that has been struck down in many of the school districts across this nation, but after-school programs, it may cost them about $3,800 for each student. To go to the university, you know, on average, it might be about $20,000 a year. A Job Corps training program is $39,000 a year. The benefit to society is that you have a college graduate whose lifetime tax contributions is about $1 million. Okay, so that's your benefit. Look at the cost. If you have a kid who is caught up into the system and is in juvenile detention, that's going to cost $49,000 a year. So you look at that, $49,000 a year versus $3,800 a year for an after-school program. Now you take that same juvenile, now he goes to an adult correctional facility or even a juvenile correctional facility, $123,000. Then you send him to adult prison, that's $25,000 a year. The cost to society is $3.8 million
Wow.
for that one person. And a city or a state or whatever could have just invested $4,000 in an after-school program to keep that kid occupied instead of allowing them to run the streets and get in trouble.
And if you go ask any parent, you say, would you rather your kid be in jail during the day or in school during the day? We don't even need to ask that question. The issue is, how is it that the school system has found that it's better to lock the children up than to keep them in the classroom? That is where the issue lies. How do you say because a child has an outburst in class, they deserve to be arrested?
Well, Cliff, I think that falls back on the teachers. The teachers are not taught how to deal with children. I know when I was in school, teachers, they did not know how to deal with you.
Right.
I went to a school where there were a lot of, what do you want to call them? At-risk kids there,
mm-hmm.
and I wasn't one of them. I was separate. I was a little different because I was raised a little differently. I was raised in a different neighborhood. I was raised in a different environment. And the teachers there, I noticed that they treated me, the way they treated me was the same way they treated the students that were getting into trouble and doing things wrong. They don't know how to handle kids.
Right.
They've got to teach these teachers how to teach and how to handle these kids that are having problems. There's a way to talk to these kids. There's a way to get them to listen. There's a way to get them to understand. If the parents aren't doing it at home, which they should be, there is a way to make that happen.
Well, I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, go ahead, Lamont.
Yeah, you know what? And I was thinking here, folks, and ladies and gentlemen out there, these are things that are being done. I've got an opportunity on this particular bill. We have left as a country and as America, we've left the commitment to the children. We've left that long time ago that we understand. Do you understand, rather, I guess I'll pose a question to America. Do we not understand that the kids and the children are our future?
Yeah.
So if we are locking up our kids, we are locking up future presidents, future
That's right.
congressmen,
That's
future
right.
judges. And I think Congressman Richmond's position, we have to stop saying that now because in some way, Cliff, Lisa, Sam, we can stop the bleeding.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And start anew. I think that's so important. If you go here really quick, these are co-sponsors of the bill by Congressman Richmond. Frederica Wilson, Beanie Thompson, Judy Chu, Eleanor Holmes Norton, Donald Payne, Yvette Clark, Matt Cartwright, Joyce Beck. All of these people are saying change has to happen.
That's right.
Change has to happen. And what it points to is not just that this prison, the school-to-prison pipeline needs to be broken and disrupted, but this points to the industrial prison complex.
Sure.
Because if you can take kids and say, hey, instead of letting you work at McDonald's for minimum wage and us make a dollar off of burger, if we can get you into the industrial complex and let you work for 20 cents an hour and then sell the furniture that you build at $200, $300 a piece, we have just basically groomed us a new slave for the system where we can make money. That is why, I mean, and when you look at Congressman Richmond's stance on the whole prison reform as a whole, that is his stance, is to basically dismantle the entire system on a whole. This is AJC Radio, where we bring you just the message of justice around the world. I need more coffee. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a couple minutes to get deeper into some more of what Congressman Richmond is doing. And stay tuned. Give us a call as well. If you want to chime in on this, you got something to say, you got a question, reach us at 347-838-8976. We'll see you on the other side of this break.
My name is Brian Banks. In 2002, I was wrongfully convicted of a crime I did not commit. I know you hear that a lot, but in my case, it's true.
The California Innocence Project is a nonprofit clinic at California Western School of Law devoted to investigating and litigating cases where innocent people may have been wrongfully convicted. My name is Justin Brooks, and I'm director of the California Innocence Project. Since 1999, we've investigated thousands of cases. Where there's strong evidence of innocence, we go to court and we free our clients. Law students and law professors work together to seek justice in these cases. Over the past 14 years, we've been able to free many innocent clients. So if you or someone you know has been falsely convicted of a crime, or if you'd like to donate to our cause, then please contact the California Innocence Project at californiainnocenceproject.org.
The California Innocence Project had my conviction reversed, gave me my life back, and helped me fulfill my dream of playing in the NFL.
Please support the California Innocence Project and help bring home victims of an imperfect justice system.
Now it's time. Time to change the face of justice.
Did you know that minority and youth participation in juries is extremely low to non-existent?
The incidence of youth and minority offenders faced with trials have exploded.
Youth and minorities are not being represented as they should be.
We must represent for people to get fair trials.
If you acquire a state ID or driver's license, it allows you to register to vote.
And it allows you to become eligible for jury service.
If you're 18, a U.S. citizen with a state ID or driver's license, and registered to vote,
you're eligible to be called for jury duty.
If called and selected, make it your duty to serve.
We can't get justice without you. Change.
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 Change the face of justice.
Check your local county or state jury service website for further details.
Thank you.
Welcome back to AJC Radio, where we bring the message of justice around the world. I'm Cliff Stewart, along with Lamont Banks, Lisa Stewart, and Sam Thurman. And tonight we're having the spotlight on Capitol Hill. We are spotlighting Congressman Cedric Richmond and some of the different initiatives that he has going on. You know, when you really look into what the congressman, what he is standing for, you know, you're talking about the criminal justice reforms, ending the school to prison pipeline. I mean, just tearing down the parts of the judicial system that really need to be rooted out. I mean, we all can say the system is broken, but like he said in the clip that we played, until we get to the specific issue of what's going on and how to address that, that is where we need to begin, and that is what he—that's what he's doing.
And I think, Cliff, to your point with that, if I may add with that, it says the congressman right now is part of a bipartisan working group working on impactful reforms this Congress. Number one, that's a word we don't hear too often Congress.
Right.
Bipartisanism. It tells you and speaks to the character of Congressman Richmond.
Yes,
but he—I mean, there are people all over the country that feel something from this young man. That he's out here, he's hungry. But that's what we need in Congress, and we have one very important person that feels the same way.
The city of New Orleans has had its trials, but you've also had great champions fighting to see you through the tough times. Cedric Richmond is one of those champions. From coaching and mentoring kids who grew up like he did, to passing tax credits to help New Orleans businesses get back on their feet after Katrina, Cedric's always been there, making a difference for the community. New Orleans needs Cedric Richmond in Congress, and so do I.
I mean, that speaks volumes.
Right. For those of you who may not
that's
know
who's... That's a great endorsement right there.
Yeah, for those of you who may not know whose voice that is, there's the voice of President Barack Obama endorsing Congressman Richmond.
Sure.
And see, he understands, and I'm talking about Congressman Richmond, he understands the entire picture. For you to be a bipartisan member of Congress means that you've set the politics on the sideline and said, look,
absolutely,
this is about, especially when it comes to our children, you said, let's lay politics down and deal with the real issues on what needs to be handled, what needs to be changed. We can come together on something. If nothing else, at least we can come together on helping our children, on realizing that the prison system needs to be modified, needs to be fixed. Go ahead, Sam.
And you know, Cliff, when you talk about that from a bipartisan perspective, the reforms that are needed in the judicial system, whether it be some laws that need to be changed, whether you're talking about prison reform, whether you're talking about, you know, just things that need to happen with after folks are out of prison, that knows no politics.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It doesn't have a party affiliation. It's like the wrong is done to a Democrat as well as a Republican. And that's one of the things that's troubling when you look at some of the initiatives and the politics that comes into play. When you look at the co-sponsors of bills, it in some cases, it has some starch political alliances, and you have something that is worthy, that needs to have the attention of the entire Congress, but some folks don't jump on board. So, you know, when you have Congressman Richmond and he is taking the initiative to bring these issues forward, he's taking the initiative to be part of bipartisan committees and that type of thing.
Well,
that's what we need across the board. Otherwise, you know, you get these stalemates and you'll have something that gets proposed 1 year, and then it goes through an entire Congress and doesn't get the legs or the support that it needs in order to move forward.
Well, Cliff, as I'm hearing the national anthem of this country, man, you know, there was a time in this country where, you know, when you heard the national anthem, man, you believed that people on Capitol Hill were marching, folks were saluting, the president is being, you know,
yeah,
America out there. We need to get back to this, right?
Absolutely.
That's right. I mean,
right,
there was a time that when you heard this music that's going on right here, it's time to stand up,
that's
put
right,
your right hand over your heart, let tears flow out of your eyes and say, this is my country. to my country, 'tis of thee, the land of liberty, and the rest of the song. But what we have is, because there is such a fracture in Congress, because there is such a separation, I mean, for the president to get up and one half of the room says we're going to clap on something, and the other half says we're going to stand, we're going to sit here and look stone faced, that shows us as a nation, not just that room, because you cannot say we're going to get anything done. A divided city cannot build itself. Sure. Nothing is going to happen when you have that type of division. When we look at individuals such as Congressman Richmond, he says it's not about the politics. It's about the kids. It's about those suffering in solitary confinement. It's about the judicial system that needs to be reformed, because you have people dying in prison for no particular reason. I mean, former Attorney General Eric Holder said, we have too many people in prison for no good legal reason. There's no reason we should have these people in prison. But as you look at some of these other initiatives that are on the table by some of these groups, you look at the ones who are fighting minimum prison sentences, and you say, you just ask yourself, why are you fighting it? What is your answer? And then the ones who have come together, the reason they came together, the common ground they found, which I'm glad they found one, but to say that the common ground that they found and that they harp on, say, well, we need to change it because it's costing the taxpayers too much money. Lay aside the fact that it's costing too much money. Sure, that's a good reason, but the fact that people are going to prison for no reason, the fact that they're staying in there too long, you get caught with a dime bag of weed and you spend 10, 20 years in prison?
Well, I'll tell you this, Cliff. You know, as I'm looking over this information, you know, I'm so impressed with Congressman Richmond. As I went on earlier to say that he has crossed bipartisan lines, it says here to addressing issues as far as increasing good time credits, to reduce sentences for nonviolent offenders, curtailing the mandatory minimums, and establishing reentry programs so that ex-offenders can reenter society with remarkable skills, making them less likely to offend. That, ladies and gentlemen, is America.
Right.
Absolutely. That Absolutely. Is the United States of America. And, I mean, Congressman Richmond is a poster congressman, if you will, of this agenda.
That's it. Because when you say that it's the home of the brave and the land of the free, and this is America is where you can have a dream and the dream can come true. Well, some people make mistakes on the way to fulfilling their dreams. And if I made a mistake, I paid my debt to society, and then when I come out and I still don't have a chance to realize my dream, that is an issue. You know, we talked about other state officials that said when a person comes out of prison, we need to help them to expunge their record. We need to have programs in place that helps them to become a viable member of society. And when you look at Congressman Richmond, one of the things that stood out to me about his Solitary Confinement Study and Reform Act is you look at the people, you look at the organizations that stand with him. You look at these organizations are not your typical political organizations. These are organizations about human rights, about advocacy. It says here that the Solitary Confinement Study and Reform Act of 2014 is supported by Amnesty International, the American Civil Liberties Union, the International Coalition to Free the Angola Three, and the National Religious Campaign Against Torture. These are no small organizations
and
with him. And a Just
Cause.
Exactly. Yeah. This is not small potatoes. You're talking about these are organizations that not only America as a nation, but the world recognizes that these are human rights advocacy groups, that they have the voice, they have the they have the ear rather, and they have the support. They support Congressman Richmond. That speaks volumes to who this man is. As a quote unquote, you almost don't want to call him a politician,
right?
Because this is a human being.
Yeah.
This is a real person who says, I'm taking real issues and I'm putting on the table how we can address fixing these particular concerns.
And Cliff, if I may, I'm going to read just a quote from Representative Richmond. And it's a summary that's on his website where, that's talking about the Solitary Confinement Reform Act. And he says that our approach to solitary confinement in this country needs immediate reform. The practices imposed on prisoners, including the seriously mentally ill and juveniles at all levels of our penal system, raise significant Eighth Amendment concerns, and it is time that we have this conversation about what what we're doing in our country. Congressman Richmond goes on to say, "Do we feel comfortable?" I'm going to repeat that. Do we feel comfortable putting a man or a woman in a dark hole for decades on end with no additional due process? Is this practice consistent with our values? I don't think so. I know we're better than that. For a man to make a comment like that, you know, and Lamont, you know, we had shared some insights on what the hole is like. You know, a couple of weeks ago, or about a week ago, we had Ramon Hamilton on, who is the producer of that that short film series called The Hole.
Sure.
And that is such a graphic depiction of what happens. It's you know, you have to applaud Congressman Richmond for this effort, because it is no small thing when you talk about someone being in an 8x10 cell and with no light to the outside and getting mistreated.
Well, I'll tell you this, Congressman Cliff and Lisa and Sam, Congressman Richmond says here he was born and raised in New Orleans. That's not a suburb in most cases. New Orleans has some rough areas down there. Says that Congressman Richmond is a strong believer in the value of mentorship in his hometown.
Yeah.
Now, when you get a congressman that understands the importance of being a mentor, that attitude and that spirit goes to Congress.
That's right. That's right.
Not only do I need to mentor my colleagues, I may need to mentor. I have to every day actively mentor my constituents.
That's right.
To be an example of what it is to do the right thing, to stand for the right thing. Cliff, as you alluded to earlier, the things that this man is talking about, the stand that he's taken, make no mistake about it, this isn't easy on Capitol Hill to do.
No, it's not.
We've seen that with our own president.
Right. That's right.
That should be applauded.
The opposition that any member of Congress gets when they stand up for the things that are... I mean, bottom line, for the things that are right, for the things that really mean something to the people. Because most of the time, the politicians are about the politicians. They're about advancing their career, seeing where they can go to the next step in their career. And that is where their whole attention is aligned to. To see a person that says, you know what, I came from your community. I understand you, who you are, where you came from, what you're about, and now that I'm in Congress, I have not lost that vision. My vision is not just to elevate my career, but the reason I want to elevate my career is so that I can help you as a member of my community to basically pull you up to get you out of the hole that you're in, to help you to help yourself. A lot of times you have people who don't even know what direction to take in life. They don't know how to say, okay, I need to take the steps to help myself. They don't know how they need someone to lead them. Congressman Richmond is one of those people that says, hey, I'm just a people person. I came from, in New Orleans, you know, hey, it's mostly, there's a lot of swampland down there. I don't know if that's where he came from, but you can see him telling his community, look, I came from here, I'm you, and I'll do what I need to do to ensure that your message is taken on Capitol Hill.
Well, ask me a question, Cliff, Lisa, Sam, anybody, research team, AJC team, an Avenger does what? Can somebody tell me, you know, an Avenger is somebody that feels like they've been where you've been. They can understand and have a feeling to do something. Ladies and gentlemen of America, I'm going to tell you something right now. Congressman Richmond gives me the impression of an Avenger, man.
He's an Avenger.
You know what
of
I mean?
Justice.
He's Avenger of Justice. We very seldom find that.
That's right.
And if you're wondering what music is playing back there, folks, that's the Avenger that we're trying to shine on, Congressman Richmond. This is awesome, man.
Yeah, it is.
You know, when do we get an opportunity to see and hear somebody behind on Capitol Hill making a difference and working without effort to make a difference?
Well,
we're trying hard to do it.
Lamont, you know, the other thing, too, is that we talk from time to time about how, you know, once a person goes behind the wall, they have no voice.
Right. Sure.
And so when you have someone on Capitol Hill who is willing to put it all out there on the line and recognize the fact that there are some serious issues in our judicial system, in our prison systems. There are problems across the board. And when you have someone on Capitol Hill who takes the initiative to facilitate on behalf of reforms, you have to recognize that, because again, you know, you got folks who are caught up in the system, in court. You got people who are caught up when you got profiling that's going on. And I know we're going to be profiling some other Congress folks later on, you know, on some of the upcoming programs that address those kind of things.
Sure.
You know, you got to initiate some laws, put laws in place to protect the constitutional rights of the citizens of the United States. We cannot allow these types of things and these atrocities to continue. I mean, when you look at organizations like you were talking before, Amnesty International, mm-hmm. United Nations, and so forth, these organizations are saying, you know, that a person shouldn't be in solitary confinement no more than 15 days.
Right.
And when we have folks who are in solitary confinement right now for 15 years, there's a problem.
That's Sam, a serious problem.
Sam, there's an article out here on Huffington Post that says a man spent the last 41 years in solitary confinement.
That's insane.
That is absolute insanity.
That is insane. And you know, I was looking at a clip earlier today, and we had him on the program a little while ago, Anthony Graves. And, you know, Mr. Graves, he was exonerated. I think he's in the state of Texas. And Mr. Graves was talking about the fact that the mental adjustment, the psychological impact of having spent years in solitary confinement. He said once he was exonerated, they had a party for him at one of his relatives' houses. He couldn't handle it.
Uh-oh.
He asked someone, get me out of here. He said, I've been, you know, I was by myself for all these years, and now on day one, you got me around all these people who are partying. It's like, I can't handle it. Get me out of here. I need to get to a quiet place. They don't understand, people do not understand the impact that it has on someone that's been in solitary confinement.
And the fact that the Congressman Cliff is working. He has a heart for this issue.
Absolutely.
Right.
Without a heart for it, we're just swimming in the water lost.
That's
man.
Right.
We're seeing, we can't find our way.
Exactly. And not only does Congressman Richmond, you know, that he feels for the people, those who have been locked up, those who are incarcerated or in solitary confinement, he also has a heart for law enforcement. He understands the entire picture. He knows what's going on. He has taken inventory of the entire community. And see, it's not just about, you know, the underprivileged. It's not just about those who have made a mistake in their lives and they need to be treated correctly in the prison system. But he understands that law enforcement needs to have a voice. They need to be understood by their community. That is a very, very close issue to his heart.
And he does make a good point, Cliff, in regards to understanding that the young black, the African-American, the young black men that are being killed. He speaks to that issue as well. I think we got a clip on that, Cliff.
Yes.
So I will say that we're part of the greatest body on earth, which is the United States Congress. And we can solve problems when we have the will, because my grandmother always said, where there's a will, there's a way. And it's time for Congress to dig up that will, to make this country a more perfect union, because we all know that it's not perfect. It wasn't perfect when it was created, and it's not perfect today. But with the courage of legislators like Representative Jeffries from New York, Representative Johnson from Georgia, who will speak next, with the will of strong legislators who are not afraid to have an ugly conversation, we can wrap our hands around this and we can make our streets safe for everyone, because all lives do matter. And I think that it's time that both Republicans and Democrats and whites and blacks, we sit down and say that this is unacceptable, because the hate and the disgust and the hurt that is growing in African American and urban communities around this country is playing out to be justified. And the only thing that I can hope and pray, Representative Jeffries, is that we're bigger and that we're better than that.
Wow. Yeah, when you hear him saying that, you hear his passion for everyone in his community. A lot of times, you know, you have politicians that they want to take advantage of a situation. They want to play one side against the other to increase their agenda. He's saying, no, sure, we have these atrocities against the young black men in the streets. We have these atrocities against, you know, unarmed people being shot down by police officers. But then we also have the police officers like the two in New York that were, that were killed just needlessly by just someone on a, you know, upset, very angry, hurt or whatever. He feels the pain of everybody in the community, not just the lost lives and the families of those who were killed needlessly by law enforcement, but he also understands the pain and the trouble that law enforcement feels when they say, how do we, as the good part of law enforcement, deal with our community to let them know that we are not all against them. We are not here to destroy you as a community. Some of us, when we took the oath to serve and protect, we meant that when we took that oath. And you can only commend Congressman Richmond with the stance that he takes, because it's not popular. And where he's at in Congress, it is not popular to deal with, really truth, emotion, and to be upfront about the things that you truly, truly support. And for him to call the names of the others that he said, hey, they supported with me, I support them, we have come together to basically support this issue, but we need more. We need to come together as one body in Congress to say that. I mean, do you know how amazing it would be if the entire Congress came in and said, we all vote yes on an issue? I mean, there's only one thing to say. You book them, Daniel.
But, you know what, Cliff? Guess what? You know, there's something about, you know, I may feel a little older hearing that, but I'll tell you what, when you heard that come on the TV screen,
you knew
something was getting ready to happen.
You knew. That is when America loved law enforcement. That is when law enforcement was seen that you are here to protect us. You are here that when someone comes against us, when there's a crime against society, law enforcement is there to save us. We need to get back there. We need to get right back there where when you say, hey, law enforcement is here, and when they say book them, it was for a reason, not just because they decide, because, you know, you got some crazy crooks out there. But hey, this is what it's all about. This is AJC Radio, bringing you the message of justice around the world. We're going to take a short break. You know, as Lamont says, go get, you know, get you something to drink, some hot chocolate, a slice of cake, and a bowl of pudding. And if you like, you can go ahead and dip them together. I heard that makes a pretty good dessert. We'll be back in just after this break. Again, those of you who are out there in the chat room, we appreciate all of your comments. If you want to talk to us and chime in on some of these issues, give us a call, 347-838-8976. We'll see you right after this.
For a kid whose mom or dad is in prison, life is tough. Now add a wrongful conviction to that, life just got a little bit tougher. Trying to explain to friends why mom or dad is not at the school play or at the ball game is something that no kid should ever be faced with. Especially if mom or dad is innocent. Ladies and gentlemen, get involved today to stop the epidemic of wrongful convictions. By remembering a just cause with a monthly, annual, or one-time donation, you can help in the fight against wrongful convictions. Call a just cause today, 1-855-529-5673. 4252. We seek justice for the children. As they go to bed at night and mom's not there, dad's not in the other room to make them feel safe. Not because dad or mom did anything wrong, because justice could not be found. Join us for the children, for they truly are our future.
When does it stop being partly cloudy and start being partly sunny? Why is the word abbreviation so long? Are English muffins just muffins in England? Why is it called a washing line and not a drying line? Do fish get thirsty? If ghosts can walk through doors, why don't they fall through floors? Do you yawn when you sleep? If prunes are dried plums, how do they make prune juice? Why do doctors leave the room when you change? They're going to see you naked anyway. Do bald chefs wear hairnets? How much deeper would the ocean be if all the sponges were taken out? Do you believe someone who says they're a chronic liar? Why is sandwich bread square and sandwich meat round? Life's full of hard questions. Ask one more. You might just save a life.
This is kind of, I think, what some people hope, is that demographics and a changing America will do more to change the profiling mindset than any kind of law.
Well, and the president said that was him 35 years ago. That's me on a daily basis, and especially when I'm home in New Orleans and I'm dressed down. It's something that black men still go through to this day, which is women clutching their purses, with hitting the lock button on the store, or just basic attitudes. And even as a U.S. congressman, as a black man, it is very, very frustrating, and you build up an internal anger about it that you can't act on. And so I sympathize with Trayvon walking home, minding his own business, and then all of a sudden, out of the blue, you have someone there, and then this incident occurs. And I just want to say, I think Ben Jealous said it the best that I've ever heard, that our kids and myself, we have to worry about not only the bad guys, but the good guys too, because we don't know their intentions and we don't know how they view us. So.
Well, wow.
Yeah, that's a strong piece right there. It
speaks to the heart of every parent, every black man in America. I mean, to hear a congressman say, "Hey, I'm a black congressman, and I feel what's going on. I still see it." The race relations in America, there's no delusion. They're broken. They have not been changed. But as sad as that is, to have a congressman that says, you know, I'm willing to speak out about it, not in a political way, not to say, you know, just, oh, I feel for the parents of Trayvon Martin, and then to come back, well, I understand George Zimmerman's position, but he's speaking to it from a personal perspective, that, hey, when I walk down the street as a congressman, wow, I still see white women clutching their purse. I still hear, car doors locking because I walk by as a black man. That is real. And then to understand that, and because of the fear, my life may be on the line as a black man walking, wow, through the streets of America. These are the type of things that if we had more people in Congress
that would just speak up and say, this is just what's truth. This is not some great revelation that Congressman Richmond has come up with. These are just true facts that he's speaking to, which really makes you feel him as a human being, that, hey, he understands me because he's where I'm from. This man needs to run for president.
Well, I'll tell you what, Cliff, if you know, when you hear him, when he said that, if you heard the clip, ladies and gentlemen out there, when he said it, Sam, did you hear something? It sounded like sincerity to me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It sounded
very
absolutely
sincere.
You know, and there was a passion there that he said, I worry about America. Are you listening? This is what your Congress people are doing. This is what some of them are doing up there. They need your support. We'll support you, Congressman Richmond, as much as we can on AJC Radio.
That's right.
Because this is what AJC Radio is about, and that's justice. Cliff, you made it clear. This is bringing the message of justice around the world, man.
Yes, and this is what we want you as our listeners to understand is that, first off, you need to know what Congress is about. You need to know what the laws of the land are about. But then you need to understand the people who are out fighting for you, who are in Congress, that say, I have the power to be the voice of the people, that we can ensure that laws and legislations are laid in place that will help the people of America. This is why we want to bring you this message. This is why we spotlight these members of Congress that really have something to say, that are out fighting for you. And this is why we tell you, go out and do your part. Go out and vote. Spread the word. Tell everybody that you know that, hey, you know what, on Thursday night, AJC Radio is putting a spotlight on Capitol Hill that lays out the different initiatives of congressmen and congresswomen who really have at heart the issues that affect the people of America. He's not just dealing with the people of Louisiana. These are American national issues that when he's speaking, I can feel them. You can feel them. You understand that this man has the interests of America at heart, not just the interests of his position as a politician.
Doesn't that just give you some chill bumps underneath your clothes right now?
Yeah, it makes you feel all warm and fuzzy.
I mean, this is, you know, there was a time when in this country when, you know, you could turn on the TV, the Democratic convention, the Republican convention, whatever's going on, and you could actually have an opportunity to feel something, that you felt patriotic. I mean, Sam, do you remember those moments, Lisa, Cliff, those days? I mean, me and my mom used to just sit on the couch and watch the conventions, man, and they're up there talking. Man, I'm proud to be an American.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, we need to bring back the days when, you know, I know when I was a kid, and I don't even think they do it anymore, that we used to stand up every morning and say, I pledge allegiance to the flag.
Sure.
But we did that. There was a reason. There was, like you said, there was a sense of, I am an American, and it meant something.
Sure. Well,
it meant that I stand for the freedoms that America, at that point, taught us as children that it stood for. Now we look at it and we say, the whole system is broken. But we need to get back to the place where we can proudly, as parents, as Americans, say, hey, I want my kid to stand up and say, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and for which it stands.
Awesome.
Liberty.
That's
liberty.
Absolutely awesome. That's amazing to me right now. I mean, I'm sitting here, you know, I'm pretty, you know, I don't know how you're feeling, folks out there in America. You know, you'll lay down tonight and get a good night's sleep. But thinking about what this congressman is doing, this is one.
That's right.
One. I always heard, can one person make a difference? Congressman Richmond is one of those people that is attempting to make a difference.
He's fighting to make a difference. And people who don't understand Congress, they don't understand the fight that these people have to get something done. It's not like they can just go in there and say, this needs to be done, and boom, it's done.
Right.
They fight for these things that
they
believe in. They have to fight, and they fight. And these people are not going in a quick 4-hour day, a 5-hour day, and going home. These people, when we were in D.C. on Capitol Hill, these people were working until sometimes 10, 11 o'clock at night, working and in hearings and going through things. These people are working hard to fight for what they believe is right for this country.
That's right. Wow. And when you see the ones who really they have the interests of America at heart. Like Lisa said, I mean, they're up till late hours at night. And then there's been time that we're sitting in a congressman's office saying we have an appointment. That appointment may be at 5:30. And we have sat there, you know, sometimes it's approaching 8 o'clock. And we're saying, hey, you know, we're getting the opportunity. We're going to stay here because we're getting the opportunity to bring to the congressperson our issue. And then for them to come in and say, you know what, I've had a 14, 15-hour day. But guess what? I'm going to sit down with you. I'm going to take an hour with you, and I'm going to listen to your issue. And I'm going to make you understand that your issue is my issue. I'm going to fight for you and fight with you. Those are the people in Congress that makes you say, you know what, there is hope for America. And those are the people that we want to spotlight to say, hey, America, hear what they have to say. Because, sure, there may be ones that all they're about is their agenda. But for the ones that are, who are not, for the ones who are about the people like Congressman Richmond, for the ones who are about justice and about equality, those are the ones that we need to expose to America that says, look, see what's going on, and now play your part in supporting them with us. That is what we need for you to do.
That's amazing. I'm honestly, man, you know, I need to just take Congressman Richmond's picture, put it on my computer, and be motivated by this young man that's doing some great things down there. This is good stuff, Sam.
Okay, we'd like to again congratulate Congressman Cedric Richmond as being the congressman that we spotlighted here on AJC Radio. Congressman Richmond is the congressman from the 2nd District, District 2 of the state of Louisiana. And we encourage all of our listeners to go out to the website out there it's richmond.house.gov, and that's Richmond, richmond.house.gov. And you'll see all of the things that Congressman Richmond is involved in. And obviously, you know, here on the program this evening, we focused in on a lot of the judicial initiatives. We focused in on a lot of the reforms. And then the thing with the solitary confinement. You know, Congressman Richmond is doing a great work. His phone number in Washington, D.C. is 202-225-6636. Again, that's 202-225-6603. And guess what? Congressman Richmond is social media savvy. You can reach him on Twitter at Rep Richmond. Again, at Rep Richmond. Cliff.
Yes, we want to say that.
That you want to turn your mic on.
Yes, I'll have to have my mic on.
Hey, this is live radio, buddy. It happened.
That's it. What we are, going to be very shortly here, going into the perpetrators of justice. Now, these are the people that when you look at them and you look at what they've done, these are the people who have helped, ensured, basically perpetrated an injustice against the justice system to put the IRP6 in prison. We're going to deal with them. We're going to call their name. We're going to tell what role they play. See, because here at AJC Radio, we're not afraid of the truth. The truth, as the good book says, will set you free. And we feel like a part of getting those who are wrongfully incarcerated, part of getting them free, is speaking the truth here on AJC Radio. So we're going to roll out to this break. We're going to give you a chance to go stretch your legs, get that cup of coffee, put the kids in bed, because it's about that time, and we're going to be right back. You give us a call, let us know what your thoughts are. You'll get a couple minutes before we roll into that Perpetrators of Justice segment. That'll be at 347. The most wanted of injustice. 347-838-8976. Once again, 347-838-8976. We'll be right back.
Do you know anyone who's been sent to prison who's innocent? The United States is experiencing record numbers of exonerations in cases where people were wrongfully convicted of crimes they did not commit. If you believe that no one should be sent to prison for crimes they didn't commit, there is something that you can do today. By remembering a just cause with a monthly, annual, or one-time donation, you can help in the fight against wrongful convictions. Call a just cause at 855-529-4252 or visit a-justcause.com and click the donate button. A just cause is a 501c3. Wrongful convictions are wrong. Let's be the voice of those who can't speak from behind the wall.
Federal government targeted, prosecuted, convicted, six executives in, held back evidence.
Come on.
Hundreds of pages of missing manuscripts, court circuit, 10th district denying the writ of mandamus. Free the RP6, critical rights violations, scandalous. Their motivation to finish their business with major companies, the government, New York PD, DHS, potential customers.
Come on.
Faith pretends to obtain funding from banks and angel investors with no success. .com meld down, finance skeptics, so they hire a staff to come to fill the gap with every attention to fulfill the contract, to the deal when money come back. Everybody paid the bills, the wages, take care of all of that. No Friday, they got viable software, but you prepare them to those with nothing to offer. Prosecuted by the attorney's office before the FBI gotta start investigating charges, skipping steps in the process, even barring the testimony of Andrew Alvarez. A witness who could tell why any staffing company that could do a dumb rascal credit check would stick out their neck if there was no prospect they could collect. When they're reeling the net, it all relates to Harvey Silver's late statements about the vagueness of federal law, judicial chaos, A_justcause. Free the RP6.org, 347-205-9620, just blog. It's just us, but we don't gotta just talk. We can just march to the courts for the cause with one voice and just free them all.
Come on.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the program, and that music represents a man that I tell you, you didn't want on your track back in the early 70s, I think I was two or three, and that's Barnaby Jones. And I'm going to tell you, in America, on American television, that's not a guy you want to see, neither did you want to see Hawaii Five-O and Mr. McGarrett. I believe that's his proper name. But as we bring that in tonight, we go into the perpetrators of justice. We spoke about that before last week. And who are the perpetrators of justice? Those are the folks that are responsible for the wrongful conviction and incarceration of the IRP 6. Now, that says a lot because we said on Tuesday night that anybody that is wrongfully convicted, there are responsible parties that are responsible. And we have a list of the most wanted perpetrators of justice. The danger of these folks, ladies and gentlemen, and Cliff, as we said the other night, they wear a black robe. They sit on benches. Many of them are elected. They are appointed judges. They are prosecutors. They are they have a name tag on their door, and they perpetrate those that are libertarians, if you will, of justice.
Yes.
But they really are not. Lisa, let's run them down.
Okay, we're going to start with the biggest name, I think, on the list in my book, Mr. John Walsh.
That's right. John Walsh, for those of you who may not know, is the attorney, the U.S. attorney for the state of Colorado. His office up in Denver, Colorado, he's the one who decides on, yes, a prosecution goes forward, or no, there's no evidence for any such thing to happen. Well, John Walsh was given a proffer by the IRP 6 that showed that there was no crime committed in their business, that the only thing that they were guilty of was trying to help out their country by producing software to ensure that another terrorist attack would not come. John Walsh saw the evidence and a proffer that they provided, and still, he didn't find anything, but he still wanted them to accept a plea bargain on conspiracy.
And, you know, Cliff, to add to that, he also, it was within his power to not even prosecute. I mean, when you get a situation where there are two grand juries, and the first grand jury comes back and says, why are we even listening, or why are we even considering this case? Because it is a debt collection case. I think we heard, we had a guest on the program at one time who said that in order for a case to be presented to a second grand jury in a lot of cases, it has to have the approval of the highest person in that office.
And well, that's John Walsh.
He had that opportunity to say, no, we're not going for it with this. This is a witch hunt, which it proved out to be.
Next on my list, we've got the dishonorable judge, Christine Arguello.
Yes, and for those of you who may not know, Christine Arguello was the presiding judge over the IRP 6 case. Of all the things that she did in the case, all the infractions of the so-called errors, which they were not, they were purposely done. The biggest issue that we have with Judge Christine Arguello, outside of her being crooked on a whole, is the fact that she has never revealed a statement made at her sidebar with the IRP 6 where she basically told them, one of you will take the stand or I will close your case for you. Now, she did make a statement that says there's something that I said that is not on the record. What it was, I don't remember.
Which is an outright lie.
Which is a lie, a double lie, a triple lie.
Well, when you're dealing with not a page, a paragraph, a sentence out of a transcript, well, let's say maybe, we're talking over 200 pages of transcript missing.
And we're talking about, see, when you have a case and a defendant says, hey, judge, there's a piece of my transcript missing. There's something that happened that's not there. The judge's position is, well, we're going to have to redo this trial because if you don't have your whole transcript, your due process has just been violated. For a judge to say, there's something I said that's not on the transcript, that's not available, that the defendants don't have, but guess what? We're just going to proceed forward and you're going to federal prison. That is beyond injustice. Now, you talking about a perpetrator of justice, that's Judge Christine Arguello.
And at the root of that constitutional violation was the Fifth Amendment violation, where you can't force someone to take the witness stand.
That's
when she told the IRP 6 that either you take the stand or I'm going to end your case, the IRP 6, I mean, they did what they felt they needed to do. Now, the recourse on the back side of that is the transcript.
Right.
And when the judge covers herself by not allowing that transcript to come out, then that's where, I mean, you end up with a gross injustice.
Well, Judge Arguello, if you're listening, your friends, your family, your colleagues, were you absent the day that they taught law at whatever school you may have been attending? Those are the basic principles of law.
I think she might have been absent the day they taught ethics.
Yeah, the ethics course, I think she opted out of that as an elective.
We're going to move on down the list. We've got Matthew Kirsch and Sunita Hazra, the prosecutors in the case.
Yes, those are the prosecuting attorneys that basically presented lie after lie upon lie, on top of lies, under lies, during the IRP 6 case. Now, you look at Matthew Kirsch, he was the lead attorney on the case. After he made all kind of statements saying the IRP 6, you know, they got this software that's a fraud, there's nothing to it. Then he gets up in his opening statement and says, hey, you know, this is not about anything else except a company that got free labor. No one got rich. Nobody made any money. It's about free labor. And we're all sitting there like, what are you talking about? That has nothing to do with any other charges. For him to do that, and then what's compounded on that is you go back to Judge Arguello, that when he changes the story and he has no case, she still allows it to go on, shows the culture of the Colorado judicial system and how they will stop at nothing to get a conviction.
Well, and Cliff, as you said, the story kept changing.
Mm.
Either you have a company that was a front company that was fake, that was not developing software, or you don't.
Right.
And once it was proven that IRP Solutions was legitimate, CalForensics, the forensics firm, proved that, as well as other witnesses, proved that IRP was real. IRP did develop the case investigative software, and that the software was legit. It did everything that it said it was going to do. So now you have Kirsch and Hazra who have to say now that, well, that's not what we're going to be talking about. And then when he says to the jury that no one got rich in this situation, well, where is the scheme?
Where is the scheme? For there to be a scheme, for there to be a crime, for there to be a conspiracy, for there to be fraud, there has to be something that the defendants, some type of gain, monetary gain, something.
Absolutely.
That happened. Well, a financial forensic analyst came and said every penny that came from these staffing companies is accounted for.
Yep.
It didn't go through the hands of the IRP 6. It wasn't filtered through their bank accounts. It went through to the employees of the staffing companies. And yet, Matthew Kirsch and Sunita Hazra still prosecuted this case in a manner that makes absolutely no sense. To this day, professionals in the judicial system, whether they be retired judges, retired state attorneys, retired prosecutors, are saying, I do not even see a crime laid out in this case. Where is the crime? There's no reason the IRP 6 should be sitting in federal prison.
And one name we definitely don't want to leave out is Miss Darlene Martinez, who is the court reporter, who refused to do her job and turn over the entire transcript. When you've been paid for every page of the transcript and there are still pieces missing, you have not done your job. Then when a Just Cause seeks out to try to find justice with this woman, Matthew Kirsch and the state's attorney's office stand with her against justice and ensure that she is not being brought to be made to be accountable for her actions when she refused to turn over the entire transcript.
A clear violation of the Court Reporters Act, which requires that transcripts be maintained and made available for review by anyone for 10 years. So when you step in and endorse the fact that someone is not abiding by the law, that just points to the corruption, the crookedness that occurred in this case. There's absolutely no reason why Darlene Martinez shouldn't have either number one, turned over the transcript, or number two, been prosecuted for not doing it.
Well, it happened in, I believe, in Texas, where the judge saw some part of a transcript missing throughout a conviction.
Yep.
Yes.
The appellate court did, rather, and said, we cannot do anything here because we cannot rule on information that is not there.
And now, Lamont, speaking on appellate judges that actually did their job, we've got three appellate judges who didn't do jack. We've got Jerome Holmes, we've got Bobby Baldock, and Harris Hart. Those were the appellate judges over on the IRP 6 appeal who did not do their part because they did not have a complete transcript, knew there were pieces missing from the transcript, undisputed, nobody's disputing that something's missing, and yet they still come back affirming a conviction without the proof of the judge's wrongdoing. They still went move right ahead, affirmed that conviction, and said, nope, you're going to serve this time. Why?
Well, Cliff, it sounds like an accessory to the crime.
It's an accessory. It's an accessory on the part of everyone that we mentioned before. It's an accessory on these appellate judges. And also the fact, think about this. With Darlene Martinez, the court reporter, the U.S. Attorney's Office in Denver came to her aid to represent her against a just cause. Tell me how many citizens, if you're being brought up on charges in a civil case, if somebody says you owe me money, Lamont, do you think that the federal government, the U.S. Attorney's Office up in Denver, John Walsh and those guys, they're going to say, hey, we're going to represent Lamont because we don't think you should mess with him about the fact that he owes you money? Unheard of. But with Darlene Martinez, to ensure that all the tracks were covered that led back to the crookedness and the illegal activity of Judge Christine Arguello, they represented Darlene Martinez, the court reporter. So all of these people, as you say, are accessories to one of the biggest conspiracies against justice that we've ever heard of. And many people that we tell this story to, they said, this is a movie. I've never heard anything like this in my life.
It sounds like there's some footprints by Judge Arguello, the three appellate judges, and we got some footprints sitting and stamped on the Constitution. These are crimes of the Constitution. Something has to be done. Lisa, who else is guilty?
You know what? I'm going to jump over to Judge Jackson. Judge Jackson was the judge who was presiding over the civil case that was brought against Ms. Darlene Martinez. This man said in open court that he's aware that they would like her defense, which was the state, the government. They would like for him to use the law in some way to step over this and dismiss this case. But he said he wasn't going to do that because there was no reason for any part of that transcript to be missing. He said in open court, there's obviously something missing. It's obvious that something's missing. He also made a comment in regards to if that was justice. Cliff, what did he say about that?
That's right. He asked the prosecutor that was there from the U.S. Attorney's Office. He said that if any defendant felt like that his options that were on the table was that he had to get on the stand and testify when, if not presented, if not told that by a judge, that he would not have testified. Judge Jackson asked the prosecutor if a person just felt that it was implied that they would need to testify against their will, would you call that justice? And the prosecutor said, no, Judge, I wouldn't call that justice. That is when Judge Jackson made the statement that you would like for me to use some piece of law to basically get you out of this so that no one would ever know what happens to this transcript. Now, he makes this statement, and we're thinking, he must be for justice. But then after some days, he turns around, and on a technicality, he uses some law. I mean, spoke his own prophecy, uses some law to throw it out so that no one would ever know what happened to those transcripts. That's an atrocity of justice.
Well, these are perpetrators, ladies and gentlemen. These are not Avengers, as Congressman Richmond was tonight. These are those that are exactly the opposite. And the definition in Webster should have Judge Arguello and these three judges and these prosecutors as the definition of corruption, of conspiracy, of perpetrators, of liars, of crooks. What other adjectives do we have that fits the crime here? Lisa, who else?
We've got an IRS agent, John Smith, who was at the head of this investigation he's an FBI agent, John Smith, who was leading up this investigation, knowing full well that there was no crime that had been committed here. He had been investigating this for quite some time and had been made fully aware that there was no crime here. But that did not stop him from pursuing this and trying to ensure that innocent men went to prison. And why would he do that?
Because he's a crook along with the other crooks.
Well, you know, and on the thing with Agent Smith, Lisa, he had actually got sworn statements.
Sworn affidavits.
Sworn affidavits from retired federal agents who were actually working in the IRP Solutions facility, working on behalf of the project as far as the case investigative lifecycle software. He even contacted agencies in Washington, D.C. to inquire as to whether or not IRP Solutions was a legit company. Excuse me. Before he even got the search warrant signed by Judge Schaefer, he knew that IRP was legit. And so to put the wording in a search warrant affidavit that this company is purportedly developing software was a straight-up lie right before he even got it signed.
That's right.
That's unbelievable. Perpetrators. How many? Lisa, who else, man? Do we have a family of conspirators and criminals?
I think we do. We also have Greg Goldberg, who's an attorney, who hand-delivered a letter to Matthew Kirsch encouraging him to prosecute these men who he also knew were innocent.
And the thing about Goldberg, thing about him is that Goldberg was previously a U.S. attorney that worked in the office with Matthew Kirsch. To compound his his perpetration against justice is the fact that he interfered with a federal prosecution, because you cannot, as a private attorney, be involved with a federal prosecution. But in the court records, we see John Smith and Greg Goldberg sending paperwork back and forth to each other, which is a federal crime.
Yeah,
and the reason that he hand-delivered this information to Matthew Kirsch is because he knows that he would have been brought up on mail fraud and wire fraud had he sent it in the mail or had he faxed it over. So these crooks know how to circumvent the system to get their agenda across.
And as Sam had mentioned before, that who was it?
Judge
John Smith.
Oh, great. I'm sorry, yeah.
He got the signed affidavits. Those affidavits were from John Epke and Gary Hilberry, who were working side by side with the IRP6, working on this software to make the definitions, to make the changes that were requested. These men came in and lied through their teeth when they were questioned about this information, and just flat out lied about it to help ensure that these men went to prison. Now, we have our sixth good-for-nothing CJA attorneys. We've got Thomas Goodread, Clifford Varner, Thomas Richard, Robert Berger, Mitchell Baker, and Boston Stanton Jr. Those were the six attorneys that were assigned to these men by the government, who did absolutely nothing to help represent these men. For a year, they never looked at a piece of discovery. They never interviewed a witness. They did absolutely nothing but advise these men that you need to just take a plea and go on to prison. Go ahead and go to prison because you're not going to win this case. Then aside from him, we also have FBI agent Robert Mullen. He also came in and lied through his teeth.
Yes.
And he was the one, I believe, that the other FBI agents stood in the way to ensure that he was not served,
right,
so that he could not appear in court to testify because he had vital information that could have proven the innocence of these men. And he was not even allowed to be served.
And Lisa, he was also the FBI agent that was in the second grand jury, if I recall correctly.
Yes, that's
and
correct.
And so to not have even been a part of the initial investigation, to come into a second grand jury and paint this picture of criminality, that something had happened in IRP6 or in IRP Solutions, that kind of thing should not be allowed in our judicial system.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we also have Susan Holland, who I believe was the very beginning of starting all of this, who took this first. She was a staffing company who had worked with IRP Solutions staffing, bringing
sure.
in staffing people. She went, and this woman was just as nice and sweet as could be. She was sweet as sugar. And the minute that she didn't get her payment on time, she turned into the snake of all time and declared that she was going to bring them down. She was going to ruin them.
Wow.
She was going to destroy them.
She said she had friends in the federal government.
Yeah, she said she had friends in the federal government. And she was going to ensure that that they were brought down. This, and she went out and did everything she could to make that happen for these men.
How many are left on that list of the most wanted, Lisa?
We're almost down. We got two more to go here, Lamont. We've got Mark Garrigo.
Oh, my God.
Which
oh,
wow.
We missed him.
That's Hollywood Slick. That's who he is, Hollywood Slick. Go ahead, Lisa.
Mark Garrigo took money from these families.
Not just money.
$100,000. And what did he do for that money? Not a cotton picking thing. The man sat on it. He took it and said, I don't owe you any representation. I don't have to do any service for you. He took it and just went on his way.
Well, he did.
And did nothing.
He did do one thing. What did he do?
Oh, well.
What did you get for the $100,000 he was getting?
I got cursed out more than once. but you know, worse than that, the way he treated the IRP 6.
Yes.
Number one, he never, ever took any real initiative to have any kind of meeting with them. And then when he did get a, quote, a conference call, not a visit to the IRP 6 to try and establish some sort of strategy as to how we're going to get you guys out of prison, he had a phone call, which in his typical fashion was very short and not $100,000 worth, but it was very short, and he hung up on them. And basically, and what attorney would tell his clients, you're going to spend your time in prison?
Well, I'll tell you what attorney, ladies and gentlemen, in the California bar, and any lawyers right out of law school, Mr. Garrigo is a fraud. That's what he is, and he preyed upon the weakness of a startup organization, a Just Cause, a nonprofit organization, a small organization, and he defrauded them. Let's call it what it is, with intent to defraud and take $100,000 from hardworking families of the IRP 6. That is a disgrace. He should be disbarred from.
Go ahead, Sam. And you know, he hid behind this thing called a true retainer, which we found out about later. And basically what Lisa was saying earlier, and under the cloak of, well, under a true retainer, I don't have to do anything. Well, how can you do that to somebody? How can you know you haven't done anything, and then you say, well, because it's a true retainer, I really don't have to do anything. But we found out that is reserved really for large organizations. Well, and when those large organizations do it, yeah, that attorney is making himself available, but he puts everything else on the shelf.
Well, I'll put it
that is not what happened in this situation. I'm sorry.
No, Sam, you're fine. I'll put it this way, ladies and gentlemen. You've seen the cartoon on television called The Road Runner, and I'll tell you, the little coyote would actually, you remember when he would get stomped to death by a truck, the truck would back up, the Road Runner, rather, would back up and run him over again. Mr. Garrigos, that is what you did to a Just Cause. And the families of the IRP 6, because you took $50,000 from them, and you came back and did it again.
And you know, Lamont, I just got a text message from a loyal listener who said, we forgot somebody. Go ahead.
And Luana, I know you're listening. I have not forgotten Rick Cornfield. Rick Cornfield represented Luana Clark. And Luana Clark's case was directly tied to the IRP 6 case. And this man went into court with her, and he didn't do anything. He could have gotten, Luana Clark was being brought up on perjury charges, mind you.
Which nobody goes to prison
Nobody
for.
Goes to prison for perjury. They sent Luana Clark to prison for 6 months on a perjury charge because Rick Cornfield, a crooked, good-for-nothing attorney.
Denver attorney.
Yes, sat in there and did nothing. He was told, why don't you get a video from the bank? They're saying that she came into the bank and she made this transaction. Video from the bank would have exonerated that, would have proved that that wasn't true. He could have gotten the handwriting expert. He chose not to do that.
As a matter of fact, Lisa, you know, the handwriting expert, she actually said she was surprised that none of the evidence that she provided, that none of the evidence was even used.
Yep.
She was shocked.
Rick Cornfield got it and said, once the family came together and pulled together the money and paid for the handwriting expert, who was actually, I mean, her credentials are over the top. Her credentials are over the top. She's used by the federal government in their handwriting expert case, where they need a handwriting expert. And her none of her findings were ever even brought to light. It was never used. It was never, and it
was clear.
It proved without a doubt that LaWanna Clark was innocent. He sat on the sidelines. He hardly object. He didn't object. He didn't do anything. He sat there and he basically handed her over to that same crooked U.S. assistant U.S. attorney Matt Kirsch.
Now, didn't he show up? Over. Didn't he show up at the appellate brief?
Oh, absolutely.
And what happened with that?
He came in with his good buddy Matt Kirsch.
He didn't sit on the side of the.
Oh, no. No. He came in with the prosecutor
and
who
sat
was
over
trying
there with
to lock her up.
Wow. And when you look at this list of all these perpetrators of justice, and what really gets to me is the judges on this list: Judge Christine Arguello, Appellate Judge Jeremy Holmes, Bobby Baldock, Harris Hart, and Circuit Judge Jackson. You know, the judge's creed says this: each justice or judge of the United States shall take the following oath or affirmation before performing the duties of his office. I, Judge Christine Arguello, Judge Jackson, do solemnly swear or affirm that I will administer justice without respect to persons and do equal right to the poor and to the rich, and that I will faithfully and impartially discharge and perform all the duties incumbent upon me as judge under the Constitution and laws of the United States. So help me God. Well, I hope God helps you into the judgment chamber and gives you all of the rewards that you are due for the bang-up job you have done here on earth.
Well, folks, those are the perpetrators of justice. And they are most wanted, not only in one state or another, but they're wanted around the United States. And their acts do affect the entirety of this country, this nation's fight for justice. We want to take a minute tonight and thank Brandon Rassaway, the Director of Communication for the Honorable Congressman Cedric L. Richmond, for giving us an opportunity to display and to honor and to shine the spotlight on Congressman Richmond. If you're listening out there tonight, Congressman, we salute you. We thank you for your service to your community and to this country. And it's a great thing to see what you're doing, and we applaud you and your efforts. Cliff?
Yes, I want to say thank you to everyone who called in tonight. We appreciate your comments, your questions. To those in the chat room, all you guys really had it going on tonight, and we appreciate that. To our production team, Captain Kyle and Dustin Jackson, helping out Ill Skills Girl. They got a couple of interns in there now, getting some help from the Golden Sisters. We appreciate all of you in there tonight. Also, to the production support team, they give us the accurate and up-to-date information so that you can pass that on to us. To the truth, we know that you're out there. We appreciate it.
We want to also remind you one more time about GoFundMe.com. I want you to go out there and donate to these families. This donation will go directly to the families of the IRP6, the families who are left in the wake of this horrible tragedy of justice. They need your support in whatever way you can offer it. They need it.
And ladies and gentlemen, what you've heard tonight is Spotlight on Capitol Hill. Join us next Thursday. We'll be featuring another congressman who is making a difference. Tell your friends, tell your family to tune in to AJC Radio, where we're bringing justice, the message of justice, all around the world.
This is Cliff Stewart for Lamont Banks, Lisa Stewart, and Sam Thurman. You guys have a good night, and remember, justice is only what you make it. See you next time. Good night.
Other civil rights leaders, for various reasons, refuse or can't take a stand or have to go along with the administration. That's their business. But I'm afraid tonight that I know that justice is indivisible. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
up